This is a Doxcast, not an Argon Soxcast, or a Bendis and Loxcast. Now I'm hungry. This is a Doxcast. It's a nerdy Toxcast. Discuss a Moxcast with Rich Early and friends.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Doxcast. I am your host, the page-turning Richard Early, and I am here today with our... the one and only one-shot Eric Broadshow. How's it going, Eric?
Not too shabby, Rich. How are you doing?
Good. Yes. This is an unusual Doxcast. We are sitting in a very cold recording studio.
Yes.
The usual recording studio.
Yes.
And it's a pretty random day. We had a blizzard that cost us our first night of our Magic pre-release last night.
Yep.
And we didn't even know if there'd
Typical.
Be one today,
yep.
right?
So yep. It worked out.
It did, but I'm sitting here all afternoon, and Eric's been working hard, and I've been diddling around. but I thought, you know, this would be a perfect opportunity to try to cram in a couple episodes of the Doxcast. So here we are. So
yes.
If you're not familiar with the Doxcast, it's our ongoing podcast series. We started in 2011. I don't even know this, Eric, but we've done almost 300 episodes.
That's crazy. I remember when they were just uploaded on the website back in the day, because I started listening back then to it.
Yeah, Brian Hellebang and you know, Brad Meister's been here the whole time on them. And we've got, you know, just all kinds of people and talk and discussion. And we're still trying to figure out this year what the Doxcast is all about and how it belongs and whatever. But,
right.
you know, even if it's something where, you know, we're just another one of those podcasts that got buried in that, like, 30 to 60 listener base, right?
Yeah,
like you got your core group. This happens all the time. We've never been able to figure out how to break out of that. We even had Donnie Cates on here, and we couldn't hit like 1,000 listeners.
Yeah. Wow.
Oh, you don't know that?
No.
Yeah, no. We once interviewed Donnie Cates. Well, after God Country came out, he was emailing retailers and saying that, you know, asking us to vote for him for the Eisner Awards.
Right.
And he said, anything I can do to help, just ask. And so I messaged him back and said, I'll come on my podcast. And he's like, sure.
Oh, that's cool.
Yep. By God. There he was.
Is.
So, yeah. And it was like, right. Thanos was announced. He was going to be on. He was going to do Thanos.
Maybe right before.
Yeah. Yeah. It was exactly before. We never would have.
No. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So.
Wow.
I called him a redneck on the show. So if you can find that episode, I highly
That's
recommend
great.
It.
Yeah, I'll also look for it now for sure.
So anyway, you know, and I have one other kind of superstar potentially lined up as well this week. So.
Yes.
So today we thought we would just kind of, you know, it's one of those days to sit around, stay warm, but I don't know, my brain's turning and, speculating. So I thought, what can Eric and I talk about?
Yeah.
You know, and we can talk comics.
Yeah.
So
there's always something in comics.
Yeah. Well, I've been thinking about how, like, so one of the conversations going on in the retail community right now is how few releases there are at the beginning of the year.
Yep.
We it's came
off time.
Well, and think about like the end of the year. Remember December 18th when.
Yep.
What we were jokingly calling it, you know, Comics Doomsday.
Yeah.
Doomsday Clock Number 12.
Just every big book that could possibly be released was released.
Yeah, and now on the other side of the holidays, there's small weeks.
Yeah.
This isn't a commentary about the books that are coming out,
no.
You know, how few of them there are. You know?
Yeah, so it's like, that's the... I've noticed that the last couple of weeks, so it was like going through the comics when we got them in and just looking, I'm like, there really isn't, you know, there's maybe one or two that are kind of the ones that, you know, bring a lot of people in or will do whatever, but nothing too ridiculous right now. And like, it seems like it's functioning kind of like or similarly to like movies, where it's like, you know, the beginning of the year is always kind of a dead time, and then once you get ramping up towards the summer, then they start pumping out the big stuff and whatever, which is all well and good, but I mean, it'd be nice to have something to bring more people in during this time of the year, right?
Yeah, and admittedly, we very publicly said, you know, our racks are going to be really tight, but that doesn't mean that we're not carrying the same selection. It means we're just carrying less copies. So we're talking about not what Paradox is doing, but like literally just the number of things being released by the publisher. So But anyway, I mean, that gives you the opportunity to just, I don't know, do some speculating about the things that are coming up, because...
Right,
because
there's a lot of things that are announced that are going to be coming up that we just haven't, you know, seen.
Gotten to yet,
yeah.
So, yeah, no matter what you're a fan of, there's a... I mean, one of the things I'm most looking forward to is a new Jonathan Hickman book.
Yes, yep.
Decorum.
Yeah, new sci-fi book, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it almost strikes me... Maybe it's sort of John Wick in space, because it's,
right.
Like, it's being sold as he's the sophisticated, you know, gangster, and so not gangster, but mercenary in
right.
space. So I don't know much about the book other than...
Right, I was just looking it up here now, because I was forgot, because they have the... Who's the artist on it?
Don't ask questions. I mean, oh, production team, we already know the artist. We're just asking you, the audience, you know.
Yeah. Mike Huddleston?
Yeah, that's... Yes, I don't know who that is. That's
me either.
Right, so.
Me either, but see a cover for it right now. It looks pretty sweet.
Yeah, we don't know much about it, but with the ending of East of West and the ride that Hickman's on from X-Men, I would imagine that... you know, and that's a book. Here's a good example of a book. Image is making number one completely returnable.
Oh, that's cool.
Yep, so we matched it to the X-Men list. We looked at the East of West list and things like that. It's like, hey, if people turn it down, that's fine.
Right. He must have had this done, right? You would think. Because I don't imagine he has too much time to be doing other things right now, right?
Well, Black Monday Murders is on... Is it over? It's on hiatus.
At least on hiatus, yeah.
East of West just ended.
Yep.
What's his other book? Dying in the Dead?
I think so.
I don't know what goes on with that. I've never read an issue.
Me either.
Yeah, so...
Just aware of it.
I mean, East of West was great. The ending was as good as I could have hoped it was going to be.
Right.
And I think really puts it in a pantheon of being a classic, although...
Yep.
I don't know. You know, it's weird because it's, you know, like when... I feel like 10 years ago that book would have stood out more.
Right.
It's hard for any book to stand out, but, you know, it's a weird age, right?
Right, yeah. It takes a lot. And nowadays especially, it seems like it almost takes being optioned for, like, a movie or TV show for a book like that to blow up. Like, because I don't know... Because I'm sure that helped Undiscovered Country also with that, because that got optioned like,
we
right
knew
away.
Before it was out.
Yeah, before it was even out, it was optioned.
Yep.
So, like, and, you know, a lot of the Mark Miller stuff and whatnot, which is specifically those, I found out a lot of his miniseries that he had for Miller World and his Netflix stuff was... conceived as either miniseries or TV first, and then he did the comics for them.
Like Magic Order?
Yeah, Magic Order was conceived as a TV show or a movie first, and then he went and wrote the miniseries for it.
Yeah, and there's an article I read recently on like Screen Rant that had like the upcoming comic book stuff that Netflix is going to replace their Marvel stuff with.
Yep.
I mean, the whole list is almost just all Millar.
Because, I mean, I think the first one's Jupiter's Legacy, I think.
Yeah.
And I've seen some, like, set pictures and stuff, like, because it's Josh Duhamel, I think, is the main hero.
I forget
the character's name, but they have a picture of him in full costume with the long white hair and beard and everything. And he looks, like, dead on for it, but... And I think that was the last Mark Miller book that I... Maybe that I read, but for sure the last one like I really enjoyed.
Well, that's because Legacy. Frank Quitely was the artist.
That's probably a big part of it.
No offense to Mark Millar.
I actually
think Mark Millar is a great
He's
creator.
A great writer,
I just think, you know, the impression I get when I read his stuff is there's an inconsistency, and I think there are things that he really is passionate about.
Yeah.
And then other things that are like ideas, clearly ideas for like a TV show or a movie.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, they're like. It's like any writer. Like I'm a huge fan of another guy we're going to talk about soon, JMS. But like, it's not like everything that JMS writes is great.
Right. Exactly. There was the other like Starlight or something that Miller did that I actually really enjoyed.
Oh, Starlight was awesome.
Yeah, and
especially that first issue. That was that was a really good comic.
Yeah, and that I'm looking forward to what he does with that too, because I know they're doing pretty much everything he's done is get with the exception of like I think Kick-Ass.
Well, you know, look at, I mean, I was just thinking about Kick-Ass. It's like, Kick-Ass, the original Kick-Ass, that is an awesome story.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, it's a great book.
You know, and I wonder, it was just so freaking wildly popular as a comic that mm-hmm. they didn't really have any choice to do sequels. I mean, I wonder, I don't even know if they had any idea of doing a sequel.
Right.
Like, they go downhill in quality for my taste very quickly. And but, you know, I can see where it's like, hey, I had this great idea, and we made this awesome six-issue mini, and now, like, they're either begging me for a sequel, or I'm not dumb enough to not make a sequel to make more money. You know,
well, but now he is shipping them out for other people to write and stuff, because I know he's done that with some Kick or some Hit Girl series and another Kick-Ass series that they were doing.
Yeah, the last couple of years, the popularity is so low, though. Like, yeah. We weren't even... It blows my mind that there was, like, a Hit Girl book coming out. We weren't ordering copies for the rack for you.
Well, I know, right?
Can't There's even imagine that, first, that 8 years ago or whatever.
Right, so. Exactly. That first Hit Girl series that they kind of merged together with Kick-Ass 2 for the Kick-Ass 2 movie,
mm-hmm.
That first Hit Girl series was actually pretty good. If I remember correctly, it was a long time ago. But yeah, everything afterwards was just dwindling kind of interest. Just because it seemed like he was just kind of writing them all the same way. Which sounds silly because, like, of course, like, he should stay in the tone of the book. But what I mean same way is it just kind of didn't feel like it developed any further. It just kind of hit where it was. Like, it went through Kick-Ass, and this is what that book is by the end of it. And then every book that followed afterwards, at least that he wrote that I read, kind of maintained that sameness. You know?
I just want to shout out for a second. I'm looking at who's watching on Facebook.
Yeah.
And it could be more people than this, but this is my list, right? So, like, Eric, you're watching, but Colin is watching. Colin Anderson from the shop. My favorite, though, is Brandon Ross, the regular co-host with you on our Tuesday night show, is watching, and then he commented and said, wait, was I supposed to be on this? Hi, Brandon. No, this was completely impromptu.
Spur of the moment.
Yeah, just, Josh Trumbo suckered me into it, because he's like, hey, we need content. You should make a podcast.
Yeah. All
right. So, yeah, you know, I mean, I guess...
One of the things I like the most, though, with this Mark Miller thing... is that the artists he's bringing on to do the books are getting, like...
ownership, or co-ownership.
Yeah,
stuff,
and,
yep.
and getting paid really well because of the Netflix deal.
Sure.
With it, and that's really cool to see. Because I'm always kind of dismayed sometimes at how the artists kind of get left out. Yeah. You know what I mean? Comparatively to the writers.
Sure.
So, because they do so much for... Because the book's nothing without how it looks, right?
Sure.
So seeing that is really cool. So I have to give him props for that.
That dovetails in my head into, I have several thoughts, and so I think we'll just whatever freeform them. But there's this new company, AWA. I don't know if we're supposed to call them
artists and writers something.
But do we call them AWA? Do we call them AWA? Like, I'm not sure yet, actually. but they, you know, I actually have been getting phone calls from them, and I'm on there's a private retailer group, and I mean, it's not that private, there's like 300 people in it, but, but what's interesting, they're trying a model for their books where the creator will do a book for them, but then they'll publish a creator-owned book for him.
Oh, okay.
So, and I mean, like, so, like, J. Michael Straczynski is doing their big, like, Resistance number one, which seems to set up a superhero universe type of thing. But then I would now expect a JMS creator-owned book. And he apparently, like, he gets some creator rights on the Resistance well. But
it's kind of like
a
quid pro quo type situation.
Yeah, so I found that to be kind of an interesting
one.
That
is. So. And that's with Mike Diodato also on art.
Yeah, and I mean, that company, so this is a new company. It's been formed by Bill Jamis, former, you know, head of Marvel Comics, Bill Jamis, from late 90s, early 2000s. I mean, I think he's the guy that brought Joe Quesada in the first place.
He was the one who put him in, was it Palmiotti?
Yeah.
On the Marvel Knights stuff,
Started the whole revolution there.
Yeah,
so,
yep.
And then he's also, Axel Alonso is also involved. Another Marvel editor in chief. So not a bunch of slouches. Well, I know that you know, Jameis went out, and I think, you know, he's got some rope, come up with some money to back the company and things like that. Mm-hmm. And they're doing several interesting things. This week we have a, for $10, we have a preview book that has their full first three issues, three number ones.
Yep.
The whole issue, it's in black and white, we don't get the color yet, but it's the whole story. And then multiple, like, four-page story pages from five other books, I think so. So quite a few, and so that's cool. But then they're doing some retailer friendly discounting to get us to try the first issues and things like that. And I don't know, I mean, to me, to see J. Michael Straczynski back on a comic, I'm already excited,
right? me too. His Thor run is like one of my favorites, period. That was when we got the sweet, like, armored costume that you see in the movies and stuff now, with, like, the armored arms instead of bare arms and, like, the big... that was... That whole run was awesome. Spider-Man, too.
Will we get Asgard hanging out over Broxton, Oklahoma? After post-Ragnarok?
Yeah. Love and Thunder?
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
So
he was even in the first Thor movie, I think.
I think so. I think you're right.
This is funny.
Well, yeah, and he's been. I mean, I started following his career with Babylon 5. Mm-hmm. I read a lot of his Marvel comics. I read Rising Stars. I read Midnight Nation. In addition to the Marvel comics, I followed him onto. But you know, like, and then he's been working on Sense8, the Netflix show, for a couple of years. I don't know. Like, season one of that was. I tried hard. So.
Right.
I think it was a good idea. I don't know that it was a great TV show.
It didn't escape the one of the things with Netflix shows is it's rare for them to get past a third season.
Hmm.
So a lot of them will get either two or three seasons and then be done. And that was definitely one of those two. They got, two seasons and a special or something like that?
They get two seasons for sure, and they were like a couple years apart, too, or something like that. So, I mean, so that's exciting. And then you got talent, like Garth Ennis is going to have a book there, and Frank Cho has got a book coming up there.
Benjamin Percy?
Ben Percy, I think.
Two of them or something.
So, I mean, do you think Frank Cho's book will be about women?
That's just it. Like, usually he's at, unless he's just doing, like, covers and stuff, he's usually at the whim of the writer, right? But he's doing both. For this, so he can do whatever he wants. So it's I'm sure there'll be some buxom ladies in there.
Yeah, I don't know if writing is the term. Anyway, how's everybody doing? No, like AWA. I mean,
artists, writers, and artisans. That's what it stands for. Now that I just remembered that.
What do you think? I mean,
I like the idea, and it sounds like they're. Taking, obviously, Axel's and Bill's experiences with Marvel and what they learned there and trying to kind of, I don't know if innovate is the word, but try something different, try something that could potentially be beneficial to everyone involved. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Which is... sometimes a rarity with the bigger companies these days.
Yeah, my fear on the surface, and actually I was talking to a guy from there yesterday about this, is that we're getting cold called by them and stuff. Is that, you know, they're one of the things struggling, I think, in the comic book industry is our marketing and ordering methodology. You know, and they're constrained to basically delivering their product through. That marketing and ordering system that exists, you know, because you got to get in. I mean, we drop a $4 catalog called Previews.
Yep.
There's a digital release along with it, but I mean that's effectively our whole ordering method, and we rely on it a lot for our marketing method. But it's like if you lose existing fans and shops, then you're losing circulation on that, and if you lose circulation on that, it just seems like a downward spiral.
Right. You know? Right. So, exactly.
So I don't know. I you know, they know that. I think everybody kind of is conscious at this point that you know that something needs to shift, but changing something also has a cost, and and people are scared, you know, to do that.
You always, when I hear about other, you know, people who've had positions like Alonzo and Jameis in Marvel and whatever, then going and starting their own thing, whatever, kind of, you know, kind of like how like Shooter did it with Valiant back in the day. I always get concerned. I was like, there's a bunch of stuff that sounds cool, but I'm concerned that this is just going to fold up, you know, at some point.
Yeah, do you remember CrossGen?
Yep. Yep.
You know, I mean, I think that's an example of, I like the Valiant example, too.
Yeah.
For some reason, Valiant worked. And it,
yeah.
Obviously, Jim Shooter and Barry Windsor Smith, that, you know, the like the creative talent, the market was just right for that.
Right.
It was a really high quality product with really high quality creative.
Yep. And that's what I, as I started seeing announcements of who was going to be doing stuff for AWA, that's when I had a little bit more, like, oh, like excitement, I guess, because it was like, well, the caliber of people they have on this, and with names like Deodato, JMS, you know, Frank Cho, like all these people are names people know and show up for. So it's like, so that gave me a little more faith and a little more excitement that, hey, this might be something that sticks around, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it just sucks because, like, you can see the trajectory now, because if you look at Valiant Comics today, you know, they're like 5,000 print run books. Don't quote me on that. I haven't looked at a generally, or they can get a hit off of a number one, but then their average sales are definitely under 10,000 books.
Right, you know? And so, they got bought out by like a Chinese firm or something not too long ago.
Yeah, I think they've got, you know, there's, you know, Ninjak hit that like random streaming service as a show.
Yeah. I think it was just on like YouTube or something.
I feel like.
And then now the Bloodshot movie that nobody's really excited for.
Dude, Vin Diesel is like the fifth biggest Facebook page.
I know, right?
Isn't that crazy? Like, seriously, like, number one's the actual Facebook page. Number two is Samsung.
Yeah.
Number three is like Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah.
And then I swear to God, like, Vin Diesel is one of the next couple. Like,
I know he interacts a lot with his fans. That might be it. But yeah, that's
crazy. So I mean, if you go to that movie, you're going because you like Vin Diesel, because you like a Bloodshot.
It's not Bloodshot, right? Yeah, so. Well, especially now, because I mean, there is a Bloodshot series out, or mini or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, you know, it's only obviously like we only get for like subscribers essentially, because it's not something that people are super clamoring for. They had that huge like resurgence in like the late 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
Or mid or late 2000s.
Yeah, they did a couple of different iterations. Yep.
And then it just kind of disappeared. And then
it really, you know, this makes me think about how, like, I wonder how many of these companies exist simply because they can get some cash from Hollywood.
Right.
I mean, you're talking about, like, Millar's a big name, right?
Yep.
But if he's starting with, like, he's got a Netflix deal.
Yep.
So he comes up with a TV show idea and then reverses it back to a comic book to tell, you know.
Yep.
I mean, or, like, Valiant, or, like, even like, I love Boom, but I know they got money from Fox, you know, and then they moved Firefly and Buffy over there and stuff like that. So,
yep.
I wonder what happened in, you know, what happens in 10 years when the bloom's off the rose and nobody wants comic books for TV shows anymore. Because that day will come.
Well, because right now we're at the point where, since there's such a I don't want to say drought of original ideas, but a hard, like, the demand exceeds how many ideas are out there. Interesting ideas, I guess, or ones that studios will pay attention to. So their solution is to just mine every IP that could possibly have any, you know, nostalgia attached to it. That's why you get a lot of reboots. That's why you get series being brought back from many years ago. Why so many comics and stuff are getting optioned too. It's a bunch of IP that hasn't been touched yet, right?
Yeah. And as long as there's a lot of places that need content, like comics can continue forever to provide a platform to get that content.
And now with the streaming wars being as they are, you know, it won't end. I mean, because we've got a lot. I know there's an Invincible animated series that's coming to like Amazon.
Yep.
There's
Ex Machina.
Ex Machina, yeah, with Oscar Isaac as the main character.
Or at least got, I mean, we'll see if it makes it past pilot or whatever. But,
right.
You know, Why the Last Man's Why gone last through man. Several iterations, but yep. Still hasn't hit a pilot, I don't think, so.
No, yeah, they're getting close with that.
They've changed showrunners. I think I just read an article about it recently, and that caused some issues on the thing too. So.
Right, and then all the Marvel TV shows, all the DC TV shows, there's no end in sight, which is I'm not sad about.
No, but everything goes through phases, and we will move into. I mean, look at the Marvel Cinematic. It's the biggest thing in the world. But for right now, it seems to have crescendoed with Endgame until...
Right. And they have to kind of find a new footing now.
Yeah,
you know, these first couple movies, The Black Widow and like Eternals and stuff like that, they have a lot of pressure on them to... I mean, Black Widow, it helps a little that she's from the previous line of movies. But with Eternals, Shang-Chi... Like, all of these movies that are coming out that are untested, with the exception of, like, Captain Marvel and Black Panther, it's a lot to set on, to for them to deal with now. It's they're in a new area that's filled with a little more risk now than before.
Well, I think for fans.
Yeah.
Because fans were invested in a story that ended, and now... Yeah, okay, Spider-Man Homecoming, or Far From Home,
yeah.
That was a nice drop. They did a good job. They put that out. They broke up the big, heavy Avengers story with a fun movie, right?
Right.
But now you're relying... I mean, boy, like, you're relying on Black Widow as your May movie or whatever,
right.
You know? And I mean, I love Scarlett Johansson.
Yep.
I like Black Widow.
Yep.
Like, I
love Taskmaster.
Yeah, it's not... You know, I'm not sitting here going, well, I don't want to see that or I don't care, but it doesn't... feel like a May movie in the same way others do. I mean, and it may be great. Maybe it'll be great to be like, oh, yeah, it is. It totally is, and it belonged there, you know?
Yeah. And then there's the inevitability of then on the comic side of the publishers pushing those characters, right? I know they already announced Yelena Belova, the second Black Widow?
Yep.
And a Red Guardian series that's coming out. And so you're going to see that reflected and pushed in the comic side for better or worse.
Look at this. Brandon's trying to co-host.
I know, right?
From the... You want to read this comment?
Yeah. And see. I feel like comic IPs are more prone than anything else to be in perpetual pre-production for movie adaptation.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably true.
Yeah.
So.
Just keeping them in their pocket.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, back to comics slightly, just because that's what we were mostly speculating on in the first place. But so we talked about the AWA books. We talked about one thing I'd like to mention briefly is this is already out, but like TKO Studios.
Yeah,
we've started carrying their stuff. They're interesting.
That's a cool model. I like that.
Yeah, I mean, they're breaking the current distribution model by selling directly to retailers, not going through Diamond. They have very retailer-friendly terms, so we picked up a little bit of their stuff. We didn't pick up a lot, but I think it's three times a year they release four books. And what they do is they drop a graphic novel and single issues simultaneously.
I like that a lot.
Yep, so there's no, you know, if it's a six-issue miniseries, it isn't one issue a month for 6 months. It's here's all six issues if you're a single collector, and here's the graphic novel if you're a graphic novel collector.
Well, it's nice, too, for the reader in the fact of a lot of times when you are interested in a book, especially when it's collected, it's hard to just, like, you know, dedicate that full trade price to something you're not sure you're going to like.
Right.
Right? But if they have the single out as well at the same time, because a lot of times by the time the trades hit the stands, a lot of those singles are gone, right?
Yep.
You're never going to find them. Or if you do, they're spotty parts throughout the run. It's not going to be a complete thing. And so it gives someone the ability to try it out, and then if they like it, they can continue doing the single issues, or they can immediately just go and get that collection, right?
Yeah, it's one. It's, I mean, both are a binge watch model, basically.
Yeah. Oh yeah, 100%.
But they're it's smart. They're trying to satisfy both parts of the market at the same time.
There's instant gratification. There's, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, so we'll see. One of the nice things with them is they don't have a minimum order. So we can go out and just bring in, you know, one trade and one set of the issues and see if we move them, if we do great, if we don't. You know, I mean, so they're pretty simple.
Well,
so,
they got some names on there, too. Like, Lemire has one. Yeah. And,
Jeff Lemire. Jeff Lemire. Have I heard that name before?
Yeah, right.
What's he done? So,
it's like if you haven't looked at a comic book rack for the last year. I swear he's got something out.
Well, him, or like, week. Yeah, if you look at it, like, if it's Marvel, it's probably Donny Cates, if, you know, so. But yeah, so TKO, those are on the shelf right now.
Yeah.
We
have them on a display, right?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, Darren made a nice display.
Yep.
It's interesting, too, because, like, there's a book by Garth Ennis and Steve Epting, and I called Sarah. I haven't picked that up.
That seems like a great pairing.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
It's like surprised I hadn't thought about how great that would be before. Just, I love Epting so much.
Yeah, so that book probably has a lot of potential, and you know, and we've got that's in the shop
that's
right
there.
Now. And
yep.
So, but yeah, you know, I don't know what their ultimate game plan is. They say they have about, you know, their rep quoted me that they've got 250 stores. I'm guessing that means 250 stores have bought at least one time from them.
Yeah, right.
Not necessarily that they're
continuously
buying. You know, they may be. I don't know.
Right.
We'll find out.
Right.
We'll find out if you guys buy stuff of theirs and we replace it.
Right.
So
I love it's an interesting an interesting model. That's the same like with AWA too. I like that there are publishers now who are willing to not just, you know, do the same overused stuff that every publisher, you know, in the past has. And they notice that that's, you know, not necessarily working as good as it can.
Yeah. You know? Well, TKO's got it where, like, I can order one graphic novel and they don't charge me shipping. There's no minimum order.
That's
there's
great.
No shipping. So, you know, you come in and want something, it's the easiest thing in the world for us to actually get it. So, so we'll see how that works out over time.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, the other thing I wanted to speculate about a little bit is, I mean, there's quite a bit of Marvel speculation. I mean, on the X-Men side, we've talked about books like Hellions and Cable. The next giant size X-Men is Magneto. But
X-Factor they just announced. They just announced Children of the Atom.
So tell me about X-Factor again. They're investigating mutant deaths or something?
Yeah. So basically, like, all the known mutants that aren't accounted for. They're sent out. They work in tandem with the Five.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
Like,
and they go
like Hellions does not sound brilliant.
Yeah.
X-Factor sounds brilliant.
Yeah, they go out and investigate what happened to these mutants. Whether they're, you know, captive, hiding, dead, whatever it is, right? To try and find them, to bring them
Okay, my mind is kind of blown, right?
Yeah.
Because I feel like Marauders is a totally baked-in book.
Yeah.
I feel like X-Force is a totally baked-in book.
Yeah.
And I actually feel like X-Factor fits right in that,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, right,
you know?
Right.
Like, oh, that's awesome.
It's an interesting team, too. I mean, you got Polaris, you got Rachel Gray, you have I-Boy. Who else is in that book? But, like, it's a really interesting, like, eclectic mix of people that
it's either Multiple Man or Strong Guy in it, because it's not really.
No, that's just it. Like, I was like, you had this X Factor book cooking, yet you are, you know, you throw Alex on Hellions, you know, you don't have Havoc there. It's like, it's perfect. But you got Polaris to represent the classic, but let's see, where's it at?
And then, yeah, well, he's looking that up, and then they just announced Children of the Atom, which is by. Other than Young Cable, is my least, at least right now, the book I'm least excited about from the X-Men line so far.
I just read like a little bit of an interview or whatever.
She's like,
with the writer.
She's like, what if the X-Men had sidekicks?
Yeah. Like, let's make them Gen Z sidekick. You know, very Gen Z. I'm just like, this can only end terribly. Because whenever people try to characterize a generation they aren't a part of, it never comes off well. It always comes off very, like, parody-like.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
Well, like, what do you mean, what if the X-Men had sidekicks?
Yeah.
Like, I don't even know, like...
That was part of the beauty of it, where it was like, They never had sidekicks. They had students, right?
Right. That's what I was thinking. It's like Children of the Atom. Oh, okay. Like another generation of younger X-Men. But then I thought to myself,
that's what
like,
they teased it as too. It was like the next class of students, and it's like, but they're all just basically, different versions of characters we already have.
Yeah.
Like
plus,
there's a female Cyclops. There's a kind of a weirder looking like angel type person. There's a psychic person like that's similar to Jean Grey. There's a teleporting person that's similar to Nightcrawler. And there's what was the other one? Because they had the characters on the front that they were representing, but they basically just look like reworked versions of characters we already have.
Well, they have Bernard Chang to do the art too.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Like that's cool. But yeah, I don't know, man. I am skeptical on that book.
So the team for X-Factor is, like I said, Polaris, Rachel Gray, Northstar, I-Boy, Prodigy, and Dakin?
Yep.
Wolverine's son.
So
that'll be interesting. And especially since, you know, obviously they're going to be in tense situations. I don't know how having a wild card. This is just from like thinking in universe of how having a wild card like Dakin will be, you know, because you know the key thing, rule number one is you know kill no humans, and you put somebody like that in the middle of a tense situation, you know, he's even less controlled than Wolverine is. So
yeah. Well, it's a great concept for a
yeah,
no matter what. So.
Yeah, and I like that the team consists of characters from across the timeline, right?
Sure.
It's not all just like the older characters, or it's not just all the kids or whatever. It's a nice kind of blend of different characters.
I feel like a book like that, and this is very true of a few other books too, like wouldn't have to have the same team all the time.
Right.
I feel like
right.
People could be swapped out. 'Cause, okay, so let's say they're investigating a character's on the team right now because the current story involves someone they know or something
right.
like that. It feels like that character feels like that cast could shift a lot. Or
yeah.
Something.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 100%. Like then that's what I like too, is it feels like a lot of the casts of these books could kind of shift around if need be. I mean, some of them are pretty heavily like, you know, baked into the concept of the book, but, one thing I was thinking about that I'd already had made a comment a while back about how, you know, with the never-ending, like, having 20 variant covers and having, you know, the kind of gimmick covers and whatever, it was starting to feel like Marvel in the 90s.
Yeah.
Where they were just throwing everything out to try and, you know, make a buck off of it. Now, with the glut of X-Men books we have, and then now the recently announced, you know, the plans for a crossover, I don't know if it's this year or next year, for all the X books, starting to feel like 90s X-Men, where you had a bajillion books that all crossed over, where Hickman was very adamant on Twitter, where he said, like, especially, it was probably in response to this announcement of Children of the Atom, because it was, like, just the other day, was like just he's saying like to be clear, you know, these books were never set up so that you have to read every one.
Uh-huh.
You know, and like it's meant so you can pick and choose and not feel left out. Obviously if you want to you can, and like it's not meant to, you know, drain your wallet or whatever with this, but no, Marvel knows X-Men fans, right? And the thing with X-Men fans is they buy everything, right?
Yep.
Because it's such a wide cast of characters, and, you know, one book may have one of your favorites, the other might have another, and whatever, and they're spread across. People are going to be buying all of these books. Where it's, like, very... I read a thing where they averaged out, like, with all the books that they released on a regular schedule, you would be getting 5 X books a week every week.
Okay.
If you wanted to get all of them.
Hmm.
Which is crazy, right?
I mean, that's your $20 comic book.
Yeah.
Already.
Yeah, real fast, because they're all going to be $4.99 too, yeah. Right?
And that might be okay. That might be fine.
That might be fine, but
I think you won't be reading other stuff. Like, people aren't going to, like, increase their budgets. They're just going to be like, you know what? This is really good. I'm going to read this, but then I'm going to put Avengers back on the shelf.
Right.
You know, or something like that is...
Right.
Eric Stevenson is talking about this, like, the publisher of Image.
Yep.
There's an interview coming up with Newsarama they've teased, and he talks about how Image is lowering their selection. You know, they're lowering their new releases because they think the market is glutted.
Yeah.
And which is interesting. It's like, yeah, but you're not really the ones causing the market glut.
No.
So there's probably some other... There's probably more to that than...
Oh, 100%. And so, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious. Marvel is the company that is producing the glut right now.
Yeah. I'm wondering if Image is having trouble... getting, because forever they were it. You know, you wanted to put out a book, you were it.
If it wasn't Marvel or DC, you're going to Image, right?
Yeah, or like if your book wasn't from them, it probably wasn't your best work.
Right.
They probably turned it down already.
Right.
So
yeah, and if you were publishing it through someone else, it's because Image gave it a pass.
Yeah, you know, Ellis had some of those books like. There was that female secret agent.
So like the stuff he did at. Avatar?
Avatar, yeah. Right? And I was wondering, it's like, why is this an Avatar? Maybe Warren Ellis is friends with the Avatar guy.
Yeah,
so he's like, you know what, I'm going to do my books over here.
Yeah.
That could be. Or then I just wonder if it's like already been turned down by Image and said,
right.
But now with everybody and their brother having a publishing arm, I mean, Garth Ennis is at TKO and he's going to be at Resistance and or AWA, you know, like on and on and on. I wonder if they just start having trouble.
Well, yeah, because now, like, before, a lot of the non-Marvel DC publishers had very specific lanes, right?
Yeah.
Like Dark Horse did a lot of licensed books.
Yep.
And so did Boom right away.
Mm-hmm.
And IDW, right?
Yep.
But now all of them have you know, kind of to varying degrees of success branched out and done stuff like Image would do, right? Those types of stories, they do their own, not necessarily, you know, IPs that you have the license for. So now there's more competition for it, and then you have more imprints popping up, or more publishers popping up.
Right.
And they're all trying to kind of get a piece of that. And, I could see the Image still is, like, the third highest shareholder.
Yep.
But, market shareholder, but they are, you know, the other people are gaining ground. Like, I know IDW had a really strong month not too long ago that actually I think they beat Image or something crazy like that, where they gained a certain percentage.
Yeah, they didn't beat Image because Boom just became the number four publisher.
Okay, maybe that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. Boom had the second biggest market share outside of Marvel increase in 2019.
Yeah.
And they moved into the top. That was what Philip Sadlick told us back in Charlotte last year. He's like, you know, you complain about the business model, but the top five publishers are always the same.
Yeah.
And so there you go. Now Boom's in that top five.
Yeah,
so.
Right. Exactly. That's why I think Image is feeling that now, right? They're definitely where before it was something that was on their radar. Now I think they're feeling it.
Yeah, and they're still the leaders, I think.
Yeah,
you know?
Oh yeah, 100%. So they probably just realize now that they have to do something to maintain that, right?
Yep.
Can't just stay existing the way
they are. Well, and Walking Dead ended. You know, that Walking Dead ended, and they haven't had a saga book for a year. So,
yep.
I mean, those were probably number one and number two. So for
East
that.
And West is done, which, I mean, the hugest seller. I mean, it was a good seller for them.
Yep.
And there was those delays for a while. But,
I
mean, yeah, that's a lot of their bigger books are done with, you know. And
They did just have the big,
back.
You know, Spawn did really well leading up to 300 and all that jazz. So,
yeah.
Mainly because they put out 15 covers.
Right. And I like that they then responded by being like, hey, I know we like broke the bank on these, mm-hmm. on these variants. So from here to some
random number,
they're going to be $2.99, which is a nice thing for them to do as well.
Yeah. So last thing I wanted to hit.
Yeah.
We don't know a lot about this, but, you know, I mean, coming on a podcast and being negative about something we're trying to sell, but, like, I am not pumped up for Empire.
Yeah.
I just, like, I don't know why. From the initial logo, something bugged me about the logo with the Y and
yeah,
some
I was gonna
the
say,
I
hate when
the...
they misspell things just because. Like, I don't...
That felt like it was going to be vampires to me, which it's turned out to be, like, Skrulls and Kree teaming up to come attack the Earth. Like,
that's why I'm so sad that I'm not excited about this, because it's combining a bunch of things I love from Marvel. Cosmic stuff, Kree and Skrulls, Young Avengers characters with Hulkling, Captain Marvel, like, all this stuff that I love. And I'd say... It was kind of weird, but it's an Avengers Fantastic Four crossover.
Yep.
And Fantastic Four I love. So it's like all these disparate parts that I really love, but I'm just not excited. Especially, like, I mean, the one thing they revealed is a heel turn for Hulkling, seemingly, with him, I think it was in Incoming, where, like, uniting the Kree and Skrull and then targeting Earth. And I was just like, what about Teddy Altman has ever...
dumb scene. It was just, you know, I didn't even know what I was reading at the end of that.
Yeah, episode. And it was just, and I've seen some of the big promo pieces look good, but I've seen some of the other things, like a Hulkling one shot that's coming out, and other stuff like that, where, like, even the cover art kind of looks a little dicey, and that's never good, especially since Marvel's been getting heat this last year or two about some of the interiors not being as up to snuff as they could be on their non, like, big books, right?
Yep.
So it's like, that's never encouraging. Just what the whole, they've done this recently too with a bunch of one-shots being, like, part of the event is just kind of weird. So they did that with Scourge, Annihilation Scourge, and the 2099.
Like, thing. Iron Man 2020 is, like, all one-shots or minis. Something.
Yeah, minis, like, and then the main book. Yeah.
I don't even know. Like, I was listening to your guys' show the other night, and I was actually kind of intrigued by the idea.
Yeah, I like the idea. I just don't know how the execution is. Right?
Yeah, well, but, like, I was also, I think I commented, it's like, but, like shops, like, we just didn't even order any. You know, so even if it's good, we don't have it. And I haven't had fans, like, flocking in going, oh my God, I got the Iron Man 2020 or anything.
No, last time I was excited about Iron Man, that was a long time ago. I mean, like, he had a little influx around his movie, where his title got better for a while. I mean, otherwise it was just stuff I'd read previously, like Extremis and stuff like that, that I was a big fan of. I did like Infamous Iron, or not Infamous, was it Infamous?
Yeah.
With Doctor Doom?
Doctor Doom, yep.
Yeah. I liked that. That was cool. But other than that, it's like, so as intriguing as, and, like, potentially big as this event could be for the Iron Man book, I don't know if the audience is there for it, right?
Yeah, I don't think, I don't think it is right now, and I think...
They're relying on nostalgia, for sure.
Right, and Marvel did a lot of weird things, though, right? Because, like, they do a lot of things really well. But, like, I think, like, the way they threw Annihilation at the wall and 2099 at the wall...
Clearly it just seemed like
total effort. Right,
nostalgia will bring people back.
A mandate to have so many books on the shelf, and that's what somebody came up with. And then, Iron Man 2020 just sort of feels the same way. So
the only difference is it has an actual book as the anchor for it.
Yep.
Where the other ones were just one-shots, which is weird.
Yep. Although, it's weird. You'd think they could actually probably do a Marvel 2099. They're doing a Spider-Verse.
I totally could have seen them doing a full Marvel 2099 book.
Yep.
They could have, it didn't have to be as big and bombastic as the original Annihilation, but they could have done an Annihilation mini that was more than just a few disparate one-shots that formed one story.
Oh, definitely.
But...
I don't know, anything else on your radar?
I don't know, I think, and we kind of discussed this a little bit too, I think this Empire thing, along with, like we were saying, with Black Widow coming out as well, a lot of it seems to be pushing characters that... You know, which they've done, which is no secret, and DC does it too. I'm not trying to just point the finger. You know, I'm a DC fan, but I'm not just trying to point the finger at Marvel. It's just the most apparent right now. When they try to incorporate the movie stuff heavily, you can always tell something's going to happen with a certain character in movies or TV if all of a sudden, out of nowhere, they start getting pumped into the books.
Why is Hulk
Blade in Avengers?
Why is Blade in Avengers? Yeah, yeah.
When that happened, I was like, why? And then I was like, oh, movie. And then, yeah, Hulkling now. Because now rumors are coming out that he's going to be introduced in the WandaVision show, which potentially will also introduce Wiccan and Speed, which, you know, and then Hawkeye with Kate Bishop. So they're obviously building the Young Avengers up. So that makes sense why they started to pop up again. Like in, like I was talking about with Marvel Comics 1000, with that one pager by Heinberg and Chung, where you got those characters again, but they were, and it seemed like they were setting them up for something, and like they even brought Eli Bradley back, the Patriot character, which they had a rights problem with for a while, which is why he disappeared.
Huh.
And now he's back, so they must have figured something out. And why would they figure something out if they weren't going to use him for something?
Yeah, there's going to be a Young Avengers
movie or a TV series.
Hulu or Disney Plus show.
So yeah, it's stuff like that. Like, I noticed this week or this last week. This week. They put out, or DC put out, Dollar Comics issue that was a Batman Adventures issue centered around Batgirl. And they also put out a facsimile edition of the issue that introduced the Barbara Gordon Batgirl.
Hmm.
And I was like, why? Right? Like, usually when they've been putting out these facsimiles or the Dollar Comics, they're usually in relation to something. Like, when they had the Tales of the Dark Multiverse books coming out, they had the, you know, the Dollar Comic issue of those events that they're based off of, stuff like that. Like, what's going on with Barbara right now that they want to put these out? And I couldn't think of anything, but then I looked to the left on the rack, and there's the Birds of Prey Black Canary compilation book collection. And I was like, so what this tells me is Barbara's going to probably get hinted at in this movie.
Sure.
Or, you know, or something. It's to the point now where you can see this, the movements of the company, what characters they're pushing. You can tell something's going to happen with them outside of the books now because of the way that they start to focus on certain things as certain things start coming out. And sometimes it works, or sometimes it ends up being like that whole mini series that introduced Nick Fury's son, who looks like Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah, yeah.
Where they had him poke out his eyes. So it was like, oh, you look like your dad now. And his hair started on fire for some reason. They needed to do that to make him bald. Then he comes out with an eye patch and a beard, and it's like, Then his best friend, Cheese, turns out to be Phil Coulson. It's like, okay. All right.
Well, I think the event we're really waiting for Marvel is the culmination of the long Donny Cates Venom Absolute Carnage that's, you know, splashed into Silver Surfer, and now is sort of splashing over into Thor. You know, so, yeah.
I mean, Guardians run.
I mean, Null is coming. You know, like, that's the, you know, so maybe Empire is, like, their placeholder for, you know, for the first part of the year, and then
seeding that where it's like after that finishes, and then you see like the Kree and Skrull planets or whatever getting wiped out by symbiotes or something at the end or whatever.
Definitely could be.
You know, what I like about that idea too is it makes sense then for both cosmic and Terran, I guess, like Earthbound heroes to come together to fight, right? Because the symbiotes, they're the Clintar or whatever their name is, they're a space entity, right? They're out in space, but there's so much history with the symbiotes on Earth, so it makes a perfect little way to fold both cosmic and Earthbound heroes into this conflict.
When we can find out that symbiotes have long histories with the Skrull and the Kree and everybody else too.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, the first Venom's first host was a Kree.
Yep.
So yeah.
All right, gang. That is a speculative, random episode of the DoxCast.
Yeah.
We try to post these, you know, when we're on schedule, we post one every Monday morning on our website and on Facebook and all that kind of good jazz. So if you got anything to add to the speculation, find us on Facebook, find us on Twitch, find the podcast once it goes up. And yeah, I mean, we're looking forward to a lot of interesting stuff coming up in 2020 for comics, and I hope it's a good year.
Me too. It looks like it'll be.
I'm ready to rock and roll. I'm ready to sell some comics.
Yeah.
I'm mostly ready to read a lot of good comics.
Yes, yes. There's plenty on the horizon. I can tell you that much.
All right, everybody. www.paradoxcnc.com. You can follow us on Twitch at ParadoxCNC, Instagram at ParadoxCNC, or you should just come to the store.
That's that too. So. The original social media.
Yeah. All right, everybody. See you soon.
This was a DoxCast. Hope you think it rocks cast. Oh, look at the clocks cast. Until next time, geek on.